With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
My name is Glenn Assoon, and in 1998, I lost my freedom for something I did not do.
We first talked about the Glenn Assoon case on this show 3.5 years ago.
They charged me with first-degree murder of Brenda Way. I was subsequently wrongly convicted in 1999 and sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole.
Glenn Assoon was paroled after a group called Innocence Canada took up his case. But by the time that happened, Glenn Assoon had already spent 16.5 years in prison. The Federal Department of Justice decided that there had been a likely miscarriage of justice in his case. It was a bizarre and exceptionally rare form of parole. Glenn Assoon was out of jail, but he was not exonerated. He lived under strict parole conditions, and he remained a convicted murderer. Glenn Assoon lived like that for over 4 years. During that time, journalists had no way of knowing exactly how the court came to decide that justice was probably miscarried. The preliminary ruling was sealed, and the original police evidence against Assoon was also kept from reporters. But then, very quickly, things changed.
My phone rang, and I just answered it, and it was Sean. And then he patched me through to Philip Campbell, which is another lawyer that's on my case. And he told me that the justice minister had made a decision that my case is indeed a miscarriage of justice. And I was so overwhelmed that I just cried hard.
A new trial was ordered for Glenn Assoon, and it was 5 minutes long. The Crown did not present any evidence, their way of saying, we give up. No contest. Assoon was acquitted and exonerated. He was finally found innocent. But that was not the end of it. We're supposed to have open courts in this country. We're not supposed to have secret evidence. And in worst case scenarios, where the system fails completely, and in our system, locking up an innocent person is considered a bigger failure than letting a guilty person go free. When that does happen, the public deserves to know why. But for months after Glenisoon's exoneration, the courts still refused to release the evidence that freed him. Leading the fight for transparency was Tim Bousquet of the Halifax Examiner. Tim was the journalist that you heard on this show talking about the Glenisoon case a few years ago, and he has spent years on this. His tiny independent news organization, the Halifax Examiner, took on the Assoon case in depth, and big legacy media brands followed his lead. The CBC and the Canadian Press joined Tim Bousquet's legal battle for the courts to cough up the evidence, and just a few weeks ago they did. Tim has since been reporting story after story about what the police did to wrongly convict Glenisoon. The evidence that he fought for shows the steady progression from police incompetence and bungling to outright destruction of RCMP files. Materials that were never shown to Glenisoon or to his lawyers. Files that suggested that the real killer of Brenda Way was not Glenisoon, but a serial killer named Michael McGray. In a minute, Tim Bousquet joins me from Halifax to talk about what he has found out so far in the reams of evidence that were kept from him and from the public for so long. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Kate Barton, Joshua Leposky, Gavin Bevan, Ryan Kozak, Aaron Yeager, Jason Bazadian, Laura Servage, and Jim Molnar.
My name is Jim Molnar. I'm an archaeologist in Hamilton, Ontario, and I support Canada Land. Canada Land peels back the covers to ask the question, how does this country work? And it is always relevant and engaging.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Tim, we actually spoke about this case before. You were on Canada Land speaking about your coverage of the Glenisoon case 3.5 years ago. I want to play you something you told me in that interview. Here it is.
I have tried to get the evidence in the Glenisoon Brenda Way case, the court evidence. The court said, well, we had to give it back to the police department because we didn't have storage on it. So I went to the police department and said, yeah, I want this evidence because I wanted some photos and videos to put on the site. And they said, no, we're not going to give it to you. And I said, well, we don't convict people on secret evidence in Canada, right? You know, and as of right now, Glenn Assoon is guilty. So we had a little legal battle about that, and my lawyer told me, yeah, we could win, but I'd end up spending about $50,000 chasing this. And of course, I don't have $50,000.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get that $50,000?
That was the court evidence in the original conviction, and I'm still looking for that. But we did go to court to get new court evidence that was outlined what exonerated Glenn Assoon earlier this year, and we were successful. And it's going to cost something like $50,000, all said and done. Yeah.
So that original, you know, that the point you make, we don't convict people on secret evidence here in this society or in any modern society. Yeah. That evidence remains secret, but strangely, this other evidence, which is like we have released this guy, and later we've determined that he's exonerated, he's not guilty. Here's why. That was another legal fight and another huge expense to get your hands on that stuff.
That's correct.
And the $50,000 to get that stuff. Was that all on the Halifax Examiner? Was that all your money?
No. Glenn was finally exonerated on March 2nd of this year, but the court documents that led to his exoneration were still sealed. So the Halifax Examiner teamed up with the CBC and the Canadian Press to hire a lawyer to get those documents unsealed. And we were entirely 100% successful, but it took until July 12th to do it. There were all sorts of court filings and back and forth with the Halifax PD, the Public Prosecution Service here in Nova Scotia, the Federal Crown, Glenn's lawyers, and that just ran up the bills. I haven't seen a final accounting yet. The Halifax Examiner's third of that is going to be considerably more than $10,000, so it may approach $50,000, yeah.
What were they fighting so hard to keep from you? What did you find in those files once you won that case?
Well, to put it succinctly, we found considerable police misconduct. Essentially, there was a federal Justice Department lawyer named Mark Green who was assigned to have a look at this case to see if there was any merits in Glenn Assoon's claim that he had been wrongfully convicted. And he wrote this document, a preliminary assessment, several hundreds, if not thousands of pages of documents that had remained sealed. But under the basis of that document, Glenn was, first of all, released in 2014, still had to wear an ankle bracelet and so forth, and then finally exonerated earlier this year. I'm still reporting on this, so this is a moving story. But what we know so far is that way back in 1999, police were putting folks on the stand who were changing their story, at least in part because the police were either cajoling them or hanging carrots out for them in terms of jailhouse snitches, giving evidence that wasn't true. From my perspective, it looks as if some of these witnesses were lying on the stand with the knowledge of the Public Prosecution Service. Now, I have to be careful when I say that. I have not demonstrated that 100%. But then fast forward to 2004, and Glenn finally got a very good lawyer to represent him for his appeal, a fellow by the name of Jerome Kennedy in Newfoundland, who saw merit in Glenn's case and hired an investigator here in Halifax, a former RCMP cop, and learned that back in 1998-1999, the police had other potential suspects to the murder of Brenda Way, and they did not follow up on that. So Jerome Kennedy asked the Crown and the police here, the RCMP, for information about those third-party suspects, those other potential suspects. And along the same timeline, an RCMP cop here by the name of David Moore had come independently to his own conclusion that a serial killer named Michael McGray had actually killed Brenda Way and not Glenn Assoon. So he kept banging this drum that an innocent man is sitting in prison, and he collected considerable evidence on this. A lot of it was on a computer server, but he also had several boxes of hard evidence. And this Newfoundland lawyer started asking for this stuff, not knowing that David Moore had it. And Dave Moore went on vacation. He came back. He found all his computer files deleted and all his paper evidence destroyed.
Maybe I will ask you to give us some context on this, because it has to do with this very, it's interesting, the Violent Crime Linkage Analysis System, VICLAS.
Yep.
What the heck is that?
So this was started after the Paul Bernardo murders. You know, it turned out there were two police agencies right across the street from each other, and they weren't talking to each other about violent crimes in their respective jurisdictions. And there was a lot of political pressure at the time to, hey, you know, how could you screw this up so badly? So this system was created. It was based on an earlier version that the FBI used in the United States, but supposedly much better. And what it does is it tracks every violent incident in the country, and the police officers on the ground are supposed to fill out this booklet. Now it's online, but with all these details about what kind of weapon was used, who the victim was and what their characteristics were, if they know who was responsible for it, then there's all sorts of information like that. And you create this gigantic database, and every police agency in the country has access to it. And they're supposed to be able to say, well, we have this unsolved murder here, or unsolved rape, or what have you, here in our jurisdiction. Does it fit the outlines of other similar incidents across the country? And then you can kind of build a suspicion of someone. And they have all these analysts, VICLAS analysts, and they're trained. They go to a three-week training at the Canadian Police College. And it's kind of a little magic, actually. It's not as cut and dry of a science as you would think it is. It depends a lot on hunches and how you massage the information, what you're going to get out of it. The ones who are very good at this have found they need to kind of tweak the system. They need to lean into it, and they need to do their own independent investigations on the ground to kind of take the database one step further. And that's what Dave Moore did here. He was assigned to look at Michael McGray, who was a known serial killer. He's from here in Nova Scotia, and he was responsible by this time, by 2004. He'd been charged and convicted of six murders, and he had claimed to lots of people that he had committed 11 more, and they were like, well, who are these 11 more people? And so this was Dave Moore's assignment, find out about this. But instead of just looking at unsolved crimes, he also looked at solved ones, and that included Brenda Way. And he quickly realized that Michael McGray was a primary candidate for her murderer.
Well, you told me 3.5 years ago that Michael McGray lived within a stone's throw of Brenda Way, of the murder site.
Yeah, you could literally throw a stone from where her body was found, and she was killed right there, to the apartment he was living in with her girlfriend.
Okay, so Dave Moore is an analyst of this VICLAS database. He spends a lot of time looking into this very closely and actually comes to the conclusion that Michael McGray is a suspect, and maybe Glenisson was improperly convicted. And this RCMP analyst, Dave Moore, goes on vacation for 2 weeks. And when he comes back, his office has been broken into, his VICLAS entries have been deleted, and his paper files have been destroyed as well?
That's correct. He had them all in a locked cabinet. He tells me it was hundreds and hundreds of documents, including paper backups of what he put into the computer system. But interview notes, Michael McGray's psychiatric reports, Dave Moore had re-interviewed all the witnesses in the assumed conviction, did a lot of groundwork like that. That cabinet was broken into, the locks taken off the cabinet, and all the information disappeared. I interviewed a couple of days ago a colleague of his, a woman who had the same position as him in the office down the hall, and she said, well, that stuff was taken out after hours, because if it had been done during hours, I would have known about it.
And there was another RCMP colleague of his who says that they also felt the same way about Michael McGray as a suspect. They were also familiar with the case. There's two former RCMP people saying that who had reason to believe, while Glenisson was still locked up, that the serial killer was responsible. Tim, who destroyed these reports and why?
that's the million-dollar question, or probably several million-dollar question when Glenn gets his settlement, hopefully. It's not known right now. I have suspicions. There was a representative on this Vi-Class team from the Halifax Regional Police who was involved in the original murder investigation. That's not to say that he necessarily deleted the information, but the effect of deleting the information is that the Halifax Police original conviction and investigation stood. So Glenn Assoon spent another decade in jail because this information had been destroyed.
Wait a second. So this guy, Dave Moore, he works for the RCMP. He's analyzing the database, and in the same office is a Halifax police officer who worked the original Glenn Assoon conviction?
Yeah, it's quite something.
You say it's not known who did this or why, but the RCMP seem pretty confident. They have said the deletions were contrary to policy and shouldn't have happened. They were not done, however, with malicious intent. That's their statement on this. That suggests that they know who did it and what the intent behind the destruction was.
There is a person named in the documents, but unfortunately that name is redacted. That's not it wasn't redacted by the court. The document submitted to the court was redacted, and it was redacted to the lawyer who was looking into this. So, yeah, they're protecting somebody. But that RCMP statement that there was no malicious intent, that's just clearly not the case. First of all, it does not address the boxes and boxes of paper evidence that were destroyed at the same time. And secondly, even the computer files, as it was explained to me by a Vi-Class analyst in New Brunswick, it's not that you just press a button and the stuff disappears. You have to go in and delete it line by line by line. And Dave Moore tells me he had 369 entries. His colleague here in Halifax said it would take days working straight through to delete that much information off the server. So this was not a mistake or someone accidentally doing something. This was planned deletion.
So you got like two possible theories here. One is that you've got a very clear motive from this colleague who actually was involved with the Glenn Assoon investigation, who maybe had access. And then you've got the fact that Dave Moore was constantly butting heads with his superior and was moved to a different department, though that doesn't really establish motive. That, you know, that's motive to get Dave Moore transferred, but it doesn't explain why they would want all those records gone.
Dave Moore is a fascinating character in this. He's a big guy, you know, he's probably, I don't know, 270 pounds or something, and he's very headstrong and very smart, and he's the kind of guy that rubs authority the wrong way. So I can see that they didn't like him. I mean, that's clear from all the documents. But he had good evidence that it was not Glenn Assoon who killed Brenda Way, that it was the serial killer. And he took it three or four different levels inside the RCMP to insist that they had the wrong guy. And he was ignored at every turn.
Not only was he ignored, but Glenn Assoon's legal representation had no idea. They had no idea that both Dave Moore of the RCMP and this other RCMP member thought that somebody else did it.
That's right. And they were looking for that information. So Jerome Kennedy, the lawyer, had requested this very information, the Vi-Class information, and he was told, well, it doesn't exist.
I'm just trying to get like the bird's eye view of this whole thing. I mean, you got this guy, Glenn Assoon, who is known to the police as a criminal record, is guilty of beating the hell out of Brenda Way repeatedly, a woman he's involved with for many years. I could see very easily, I think, that Glenn Assoon would be the first person that you would suspect going right back to the original murder. And my guess is, and my kind of layman's understanding is, that 99 out of 100 times, it is the violent boyfriend.
Sure.
You know? And then you could kind of imagine the cops just like wanting to make, you know, of course it was this guy, but we just want to make damn sure he gets convicted for it. So they do a sloppy job. And also, who's going to look that closely at the murder of this sex worker, of this drug user, that they, you know, that they maybe they just did a sloppy job, and it's sort of like, you know, never attribute to malice what could better be assigned to indifference or laziness. And yet, once they've done that, they now have something to protect. The conviction of Glenn Assoon, nobody wants to be responsible for putting an innocent man in prison. And now you get a much more malicious hypothetical alleged series of cover-ups and corruptions and destructions of evidence, all to protect that original investigation. Is that essentially the larger story here of Glenn Assoon, of what we think may be at work here?
I think you've got it almost entirely right. I would just add that that original police investigation back in the 1990s was not as simple as, oh, this guy must have done it, we'll stop looking at other people. It's pretty clear that at least some of the people who were witnesses in the original court file had collaborated to frame Glenn. It's hard for me to believe that the Halifax police were not aware of that. I've read repeatedly the court transcript from back in the day, and it's just absurd. It seems like malicious prosecution, the facts be damned. And as you say, Glenn was not, you know, he's not the rosy victim here. He was not a good person, but he had an alibi, a fairly strong one, in my opinion. And he had, especially in some of the other evidence, he wasn't even in the city when he was said to do things. And there was no physical evidence at all linking him to the crime. All of the witnesses were either given lenient sentences for pending charges, or they were crack addicts and alcoholics who were essentially incoherent until they got on the stand and they repeated what they were told to say.
I mean, I want to look at your work for a second. Any journalist covering crime, I mean, it's sort of one of the highest things a journalist can accomplish is to get an innocent person freed from prison. You didn't do that.
No.
The group Innocence Canada, after Glenn, you know, represented himself and exhausted every possible avenue for appeal and nothing worked, he'd been in for years. Innocence Canada, this group, took up his case. They must be credited for his release, which was this the first thing we talked about 3.5 years ago, this exceptional circumstance where he was given this release from prison, this weird probation where he was not exonerated. He was still under house arrest. He was still a convicted murderer, but he was a free man because it was considered so likely that he didn't do it, that there had been injustice in his conviction. You come in at that point, and your years of investigation have to do more with how did this happen, who's responsible, and can I get my damn hands on the documentation that the authorities seem so hell-bent on keeping from me. You were only able to do that as an independent news organization that is funded by, you know, a handful of supporters and a successful micro news organization, not totally dissimilar from Canada Lens in the way that it's set up. You were able to get your hands on these documents because you had the Canadian Press and the CBC, I think, follow you. Is it fair to credit you with being kind of like the chief journalistic force that was digging into this? And then they came on and supported you in your quest to get these documents?
Well, the CBC and the Canadian Press have followed the story from the beginning, but you know what it's like to be a daily news reporter. You have other assignments. You're not given the latitude to dive into a story at great depth for months at a time. You're not given the time or the resources to do that. And I'm able to pick and choose those stories. My initial investigation into this story, which I published back in 2016, took about 13 months of going through the documents and finding people and interviewing them and that sort of thing. And that's just beyond the capabilities of mainstream news organizations, unfortunately.
You've interviewed Glenn Assoon about his time in prison. He actually goes a little bit further in his criticism of the media than you, not just that they didn't have the time to dig into his case, but he says that media actually hurt him. He says, I had bad media coverage and people judged me on that in prison. And he alleges he was tortured and beaten by cops and targeted by other convicts because he was convicted of murdering a woman, that he was persona non grata and didn't have a friend.
I've gone back and I've read the original media coverage back in the day. And, you know, I know these reporters, so I know that they're generally good reporters, but it's the perfunctory court coverage, you know. It's you show up and you say, this person said that, this person said that, and you don't take it much farther than that, again, because they're not afforded the time and the resources to do that. I think the trial coverage was fine. It was it was what it was. And you know, the trial was a shit show. Glenn was representing himself, and it was crazy. And they convey that. And I think that Glenn, to some degree, is the author of his own demise. That's not to blame him. He didn't have the legal resources or the, you know, he couldn't present his case in a coherent manner, as I don't think most people could. There was no lawyer there, which is, again, one of these problems is like a man went on trial for murder, a brutal murder, and had no legal representation. That just should not be allowed to happen, but it did.
Well, I mean, that is a right people have. It's, I think, almost always the wrong choice, but that is a right people have to represent themselves.
Yeah, it's a complex story why he didn't. But so I think what was conveyed to the public at the time is, hey, here's this brutal guy. You know, he's done all these horrible things in the past, and he's really being disruptive during this trial. I wasn't there, I can't say, but by reading it, I can kind of get how the jury and the prosecution and the judge were just kind of tired of it all. And so he was found guilty, at least in part, because he was a tiresome character and not because the evidence led them to guilt.
And that was reflected publicly through the news coverage?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What did Jody Wilson-Raybould Bold have to do with all this?
So back in 2014, this Justice Department lawyer, Mark Green, created this document that got Glenn released from prison. It's called a preliminary assessment because what's supposed to happen after that and what does happen is that the rest of his team, it's called the Criminal Conviction Review Group, which is a bunch of lawyers, they go and do a thorough and full investigation. And that took a year and a half or so for them to do that. And they come up with a recommendation to the justice minister. And by the way, that document is not public. I would love to see it because it must have much more than what we know already. But anyway, their recommendation to Jody Raybould Wilson was that she order a new trial. She sat on that recommendation for 18 months, did nothing with it. During that 18 months, Glenn had a mental health breakdown. He had to be moved back to Halifax. He was in BC at the time with a family member, and he had to be moved back to Halifax with a different family member. And, you know, he has counseling and healthcare.
The criticism is that she didn't look at this swiftly enough.
She took no action, and it was only after the SNC-Lavalin stuff, when David Lamenti replaced her, that he immediately took action on the file and ordered a new trial. It all took place in about 5 minutes the next day here in Halifax Supreme Court. The initial conviction was overturned, a new trial was held, and no evidence was presented, and Glenn was found not guilty, and he was therefore fully exonerated.
There was a new trial, but it was really just sort of a formality. The Crown had no intention to pursue Glenn Assoon. They were letting this go. No evidence presented, that means he's exonerated.
That's it.
Who killed Brenda Way?
It looks like Michael McGray did. There is a lot of circumstantial evidence connecting him to the crime. But again, there are people who are on the record about Michael McGray telling them he killed Brenda Way.
Last time I spoke with you, you said you had your doubts that McGray was in fact the killer. You said you liked somebody else for the murder.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most bizarre things about this story is that Brenda Way lived in the same apartment building as another repeated rapist who had attacked a bunch of sex workers out west. And he lived like one floor above her in this apartment building. There was another guy by the name of Greeno who had been convicted of other sexual related vicious attacks, who was in the bar that she was in that night saying that he had slit someone's throat. And then there's yet this third character, this Michael McGray, a serial killer who lived, you know, immediately adjacent to where she was killed. There was no shortage of potential suspects on this. The Halifax police sent a constable, Steve Maxwell, from Halifax to the prison in New Brunswick to interview McGray. And the constable simply asked Michael McGray, "Did you kill Brenda Way?" And McGray said, "No, I didn't kill her." Constable turned around, walked out, and that was the end of the investigation. They didn't do any follow-up on that. And they basically took the word of a serial killer. But then here's Glenn Assoon professing his innocence at every turn, and they wouldn't believe him.
The larger context of this, as we discussed last time, was this marginalized community in Dartmouth of impoverished people, of a lot of criminal activity, a lot of drug use and drug addiction, drug sales, and a lot of sex work, and people who are kind of forgotten, overlooked. So there's a lot of rapists to, you know, lay suspicions on. There's a lot of people with criminal histories you could be looking at trying to get to the truth. And in situations like this, they're trying to bring people in to do video interviews with them, but they have to get them at a time when they're not high.
Yeah.
It's a mess. And actually sorting through this, I think, raises much bigger questions than who killed Brenda Way.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that part of the reason I got into this story is because it really gets into that underclass that's here. It's more or less of a permanent underclass that's ignored, it's preyed upon, and it's people who society have just given up on. And as a result of this, there's all sorts of violence within the community and onto the community. One example of this is they brought the sex worker to testify against Glenn. She had been living in Toronto to try to clean up, and they brought her here to testify, and they put her up in the casino hotel, which is just down the block from the courthouse, knowing the police knew this, that when she was in the hotel, she was using crack and turning tricks, because what better place to do it than in the casino hotel? And that information was not made available to the jury or the judge or even the prosecution. And that surely would have discounted anything she had said. But there's repeated examples of things like that. One of the fellows who testified against Glenn was had changed his story because the cops said, "Oh, Glenn's a vicious killer, and you should testify against him." So he changed his story. He now says that he's been drinking since he was a teenager, and he doesn't even remember giving testimony. Just on and on and on. It's all a very sad, sad story. It's about a sad part of our society. And you know, Glenn Assoon aside, and the wrongful conviction aside, we should give a damn about these people.
How far are you going to take this? You've already put a lot of time and effort into this. And what's the outcome? Is it like a provincial inquiry into police corruption in Halifax? I mean, it goes beyond Halifax. It's an RCMP question. What's the desired outcome for you, and what do you want your work to result in?
I think probably we should have some sort of inquiry to determine the specifics of this case. But another inquiry won't get us into a better place. I mean, we've got great past inquiries, all very informative. It doesn't do any good.
This is Canada. We inquiries and inquests and reports are what we do here. No, look, one big thing about this is from the start is the secrecy. The inability to get your hands on records, the inability for his lawyers to get their hands on records, the inability for departments to be talking to each other. Just the lack of transparency seems to be a big takeaway from this. If anything could be fixed from this, it seems like if it was just easier to get your hands on information, then, I mean, even the system itself would have benefited. I mean, like, how many people have put years and years of labor into this? It's tied up the courts. It's tied up professionals like yourself, RCMP analysts. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised at the lack of national coverage on this story. It is outrageous. It is fucking outrageous. It is the worst instance of police misconduct and a wrongful conviction that I've seen in many, many years. It's almost as if the rest of the country just, I don't even think they're aware of it, but those who are just are not giving it the attention it deserves. The federal justice minister should be addressing this. He did by ordering the new trial, but we need to get into the police misconduct issues involved here. And Glenn Assoon needs to be made whole. You know, I spent a few hours with him the other day to interview him, and you know, he's doing all right. He's doing better than he was, but he's a broken man with he's broken psychologically and physically, and financially he's broken as well. All he wants at this point is to be able to buy a piece of property somewhere and live out his life in relative comfort. And how can we deprive him of that one thing? And yet no one's speaking up for him from an official standpoint, saying we've got to do right by this guy.
Thank you. That is your episode of Canada Land, a program that shockingly many Canadians don't even know about. Why don't you tell one about it? And they might like it. If you know somebody who might like Canada Land, tell them. Or email me with your thoughts at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that you send us. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadalandshow.com. We have a major piece of reporting coming out this week, a written piece that you should read if you care about what's happening with newspapers in Canada. And there will be a new episode of Oppo this week, which is important because we have an election coming out. And this is the podcast that keeps you up to date with Canadian politics. Look no further. This episode is produced by Kasia Mihailovich and our managing editor, Kevin Sexton. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like the show, you can support the show and everything else that we do. And we rely on your support and we need it. And we pay you back with things like ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Please go to patreon.com/CanadaLand.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.